if there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jeff G Tonight, chill show for Friday. Ask me anything. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Sadie Edwards says, does lack of stress lower testosterone leading to infantile traits in modern men? Neo Tenny, all men younger than me don't look like men. Yeah, it's a mystery to me, but certainly I think it's hard to know things generationally because who knows? You weren't there in 1940, and who knows what was the level of femininity of males? It's very hard to assess. All you can know is while you were alive. But yeah, something tells me if you look at old videos, old pictures, something tells me that there's something very metrosexual, very feminine in modern men. And what caused this? I have a couple of hypotheses in my mind. I don't think it's lack of stress. Maybe lack of stress in the sense of sedentarity, in the sense of not having challenges in life, in the sense of less physical work. All of this, yes. But I think that actually modern life is more stressful. I think that in terms of baseline stress, and it's not that modern life is more comfortable, but I think it's more stressful because the human body is not designed to have everything given to it for free and for by welfare states and grocery stores and everything. The human body is designed for a struggle. And when you paralyze, when you become sedentary, when you have no more goals in life or you live too virtual and that's the whole of society proportionally. On average, everyone lives more sedentary, less goals, less challenges, and less struggle. I think that increases stress, actually. Psychological stress and baseline stress. Obesity also increases stress because of the links between all inflammation of the body, increased blood sugar. All of this is tied to stress, anxiety. So in general, I believe we are more stressed. And if I was to look for a reason for the feminization of men, I would say less struggle, less challenge, a less harsh environment, a more feminine control over the passation of knowledge across generations. So female elementary school teachers, as kids, we are exposed to an extremely female world. People don't realize the extent. But even a guy, even a man that you pass through the university system has been feminized. And so even the men that we get as elementary and high school teachers, they're not as manly as your average man already. So it's a very emasculating process, the process of elementary school and the little control that woman cognition has over everything, trying to control competition, trying to abolish competition. Everyone is as good as everyone else. This all destroys the actual male environment and male cognition. That, to me, is probably one of the big ones. And then I would add, perhaps there is even an evolutionary mechanism that we're just in a slide. Perhaps there is actual evolutionary selection against maleness. And by maleness, I mean high testosterone, high independence behavior, like autism, perhaps there is a eugenic selection exerted by females against all abilities of special abilities of males. That is entirely possible. That would explain how you can see changes over 20, 40 years, because we're already down the drain of this selection process. Those are my hypotheses. John Drake says seed oils all alone could be a major contributor. I wouldn't point seed oils specifically, but the entirety of what we eat and drink, certainly. You know, let's not forget that birth pills are being leaked into the waterways of the city, and they can't remove it chemically. So people in the city are drinking water that has estrogen in it. Can you believe this? I mean, should we be surprised that men are feminized? We are drinking the female hormone. Unbelievable. Because it's not fully removable from the water that they reprocess in the city. I mean, whatever, recycling in general is a very bad idea. The idea of recycling something always puts you, there's always a limit of nature, and you're always ending up eating your own shit. And eating your own shit is a bad idea. Nature told us this. Nature just tried the best that it could to put your mouth as distant as possible from your ass as it could. Like literally, if it could have lowered your ass in one of your eels, it would have done it. Nature is telling us something here. Don't eat your own shit. And of course, emotionally, that is very easy to accept, right? Because we have so much instinct inside of us that tells us, don't do that. Yet, the people of the city are eating their own shit. This water that you guys drink is literally collected from the shit sewers, and it's being purified. And meanwhile, women are taking the birth pill to not make babies, and they're shitting this birth pill inside the water that you're about to drink. Nonsense. It's like, I don't care how much chemical controls you have. Please throw the shit in the field and go gather some fresh water. Please do that. I mean, this is just basics. Do not eat your own shit. The great message of God that has been expressed in the shape of our bodies, and we haven't listened. Interesting theories, but you need data, says someone. Says Asaf. Well, I'm beyond data in my life. See, I think that the leftist and the whole crew of trust the science and even institutional science to an extent, they are committing a philosophical wrong in many ways when they obsess over data. Because there's a couple of reasons why this obsession about data and big data and do you have data and what are the empiricals? First, reflection and logic are at the root of good science, okay? So it's like the big theories of science, they almost stand on their own without any data. The data comes in and confirms it and gives you illustrations of it. But the great, great theories of hard science, some aspects of physics, some evolutionary biology, mathematics, prime number theory, all of this stands impeccable on its own. Okay? The second reason why you shouldn't obsess too much with data is that data is a human process. Data gathering is a human process. And it will gather whatever you need. It was a French philosopher, I think, who said, if you torture the numbers long enough, they will admit to anything. And this is what we've been doing. All of these universities, these sociology departments, they gather the data that they want to know. And they don't gather the data that they don't want to know. You end up having a completely fictitious narrative that emerges from actual data. Very hard for people to understand. How could you, from the truth, create a lie? Well, lies are built of truths. Lies are built of truths. Any just low-level bitch who's making up a fake story about her ex, she's inspiring herself from reality. She's never quite far from reality. She just patches the little holes to take what was normal behavior and build it into a case for, oh, well, it was abuse, it was violence. Every good liar knows that that lies are made of truths. And the university is currently engaged, and a lot of public speakers are currently engaged in building lies out of truths. How do you do this? You can systematically bias what are the studies you're going to have. What are the things you're not going to talk about? See, we all know a few truths about race, for example, that will never be gathered. You will never have a study about it. You will never have a study that says fluoride is... I mean, you have these kind of weirdo studies that get kind of excluded by academia, that get looked upon as kook stuff. But you will never have someone come out strongly against something that Western civilization is doing and is engaged in ideologically, almost. Fluoride in waters, anti-racism. These themes are untouchable, and you're never going to have data about it. You have to move beyond this, and you have to decide, I am a logical being. I'm going to draw conclusions. Some of them will be better than the empiric. Some of them will outcompete even the people with data out of their sheer logic. Like the revolutionary phenotype. You can spend 30 years of your life in a lab with chemicals and simulating thunder in the early Earth, amino acids from meteorites, and you're never going to understand the beginning of life the way this book will allow you to. So logic on its own is being abandoned by precisely those feminized new generation intellectuals, kind of leftist destiny type, who just want to flood with empirics the debate. And it's like, bro, everything that we know that is very strong, we precisely didn't gather it through empiricals. Like Charles Darwin barely needed to actually watch the birds. The whole watching of the birds of Charles Darwin is actually kind of it's fascinating because it's kind of a mythological thing that's very resemblant of religious belief. There is this whole thing that they will teach you in biology classes that Charles Darwin was traveling the world. And he went to the Galapagos Islands or whatever and started comparing different islands and saw that there were birds that were a certain way on this island, birds that were another way. And this is where it all stemmed in his mind. But if you actually read The Origins of the Species, you realize that yeah, Darwin's finches. That is a mythological thing of science. Because the reality is, okay, the finches were a good argument. But if you actually read The Origins of the Species, the core of the argument, Darwin realized it by looking at cows and farm animals. I don't know if we could say cows or pigs or chicken. I don't exactly remember. But Darwin is strongly inspired at first by the domestication by humans of animals. That is what made him realize, oh, well, we domesticated those animals to become that way. And why wouldn't that happen everywhere else? Were humans truly needed for a species to have a direction? And if you acknowledge that we can domesticate animals, wouldn't you acknowledge also that nature is domesticating animals all the time? So that is the root of the thinking of Charles Darwin. It's not like, oh, I have no idea what's going on in life. Let's go observe the finches. And let's hope that from observing the finches, we're going to figure out what the heck is going on. We need to put a complete moratorium on finches until we can figure out what the hell is going on with their beaks. That did not happen. Yes, livestock will be an appropriate term. Darwin was describing livestock. It was describing, well, artificial domestication. John Goodrich says, Jeff, it's all information driven. I strongly disagree with you here. I don't know what you disagree with me. By the way, I haven't said anything about information, but let's be clear about what information is. Information includes the theories in your brain, the logic in your brain, the non-empirical thinking of the world, the laying out of a design over the world, which is what developing a theory is about. And yes, the empiricals, they exist and they matter to an extent, but the modern obsession with it and the lack of understanding of just how solid our empirical sciences is unacceptable, and we need to push back. We need to bring back to logic. Because if you don't have a basic approach to theory building and understanding the flaws of the empiricals, and if you're just at this root level of science that says, well, it's all about the observation. Science is about the observation. You've misunderstood something. Science is a whole system of methods. Some of it is empirical. Some of the standards are ultimately empirical all the time. So like a theory that explains nothing in life is useless. Yes. And so there is a connection to empiricals. But you have missed something very important if you just focus on this loop. Gather data, interpret. The ultimate big steps forward of science are made when you can make a leap in your theoretical laying out over the world, in your ID, the one ID that explains it all. The one idea that scientists can spend 50 years after you just gathering data, proving that you were right once again. Those are the big leaps of science, and they have almost zero to do with empiricals. Ariel Suarez sends a super chat. He says, I suppose that data is only as useful as how valid and reliable first principles are. The smallest categorization or interpretations error can prove fatal. Absolutely. The lack of consciousness about, anyways, any data will have been selected in terms of, I want to gather this. Now, the simple fact that you wanted to gather this is already a tinting of, you're not just an objective, random gatherer of everything around you. You are a seeker. And you are choosing what will be just by the fact that you have decided to make some experiment as opposed to anything else, you have already chosen the forward direction of any thought that will emerge from this data. Gusparovsky says, "Hi, Jeff. After hearing you describe the first descendant of the monkey as a greasy, retarded blob, a question haunts me. How could such an unattractive individual have won the game of reproduction? It seems impossible to me, unless there was something in the female's brain that was activated, making them want to have sex at the sight of a retarded mutant. Otherwise, how could he have won the game of reproduction?" Well, the first thing you have to understand, and yes, this is because I want to explain to people that eugenics aren't what you think they are. And natural selection isn't what you think it is. If I ask you to imagine in your head, what would be a man that is highly desirable today, that is highly selected, that you want to breed if you're a female, and imagine in your head the female, the perfect female, the one you would want to breed, and understand this. There's nothing about your emotions about this and the imagination. I know what you imagined. You imagined a guy with a Chad jaw, pretty muscular, well-built, good posture, white guy. And you imagined a cute blonde girl, maybe a dark brunette if that's your style. Just bright eyes, smiling, desirable, sexy, beautiful boobs. And understand that what you think you want and what you want and what you've imagined in your head is not what nature will select. Those are standards of beauty that are the current ones, and you may feel that way. I feel that way. I'm sure that if we were to put a 10 out of 10 female, we would all agree she's a 10 out of 10 female, she's desirable. But that doesn't mean the world heads there. I mean, just look at obesity in America. Clearly, the beauty standards aren't in line with the natural selection pressures. So clearly, and I've seen so many super beautiful women end up having one or two children or zero. Why is that? Well, it's because when you're so beautiful, you are so rewarded by other things in the world, you actually get veered away from your reproductive career. You actually forget about what this beauty is all about. And you end up, in fact, being able to make a living out of your beauty. I mean, just if you're a sexy woman, 18 years old, why would you seek a husband when you can make much money? We're not even talking about porn here. Porn is obvious. But you can make much money just being elevated in the corporate world due to your beauty. You can make more tips as a barmaid. And you can make much more money than a man who would have no talent. And so there are so many ways in which beautiful people get veered away from reproduction that actually beauty is subject to a pressure down to a certain extent. Certainly, in modern times, there are more ugly people than beautiful people, which tells us that nature has a boiling revolt against your conception of beauty. So I was saying all of this to answer your question. Yes, so the original human, who was a chromosomally deficient chimpanzee, must have been pretty ugly. Now, your question is, why did it survive? Well, it didn't have, by the way, to outbreed the chimpanzee, because the chimpanzees are still existing. So they weren't outbred. They were outbred by a very late evolved form of humans, which dominated the Earth, Homo sapiens. But the original chimpanzee weren't disrupted by the original human. So how did it survive? Well, so it's not so much whether they outbreed or outcompeted the chimpanzee. It's that they were enough to live. There's a saying in biology that says the theory of evolution isn't about outcompeting. It isn't about optimizing. It's about satisfying. So the original human, no matter how ugly it was satisfying. It was satisfying the burden of living. It was just good enough to live. Now, from there, you can have an evolutionary pressure that shapes the species in a better direction, better from our perspective. But you don't have to be optimized from the start. And in fact, you're never optimized. You're always just walking forward in a direction in evolution. John Goodrich says, Jeff, evolution is just a learning algorithm. The genome is refined by data. It's just being stored by the collective organism, which is all of the animate surface material on the planet Earth, i.e. life. I agree with everything right there. I think you are demonstrating a beautiful understanding of biology. John Goodrich says, also, I think the the concept of survival of the fittest is silly. We didn't outcompete our ancestors. Our ancestors transformed into us. They didn't go extinct. Well, the survival of the fittest is a good way to understand horizontally within a species. But you're right. You are not in competition with everything equally. You're not in competition with the flies. And you're not trying to out-survive the fly. But the flies among themselves, there is a survival of the fittest. And that may drive them to maybe try to eat pieces of your dead skin that are falling off your skin. And you, as a Homo sapiens, you are being in a survival of the fittest competition with your likes. And that survival may include maintaining a nice house to charm a nice female. And that may lead you to tap the fly and kill it. So there is survival of the fittest among the flies, survival of the fittest among the humans. It's not so much inter fitness. It's in between the populations that are competing for an ecological niche. But in that process, the humans who are trying to be the best humans end up killing the flies that are trying to be the best flies. Yes, exception, Jeff Goldblum in the movie The Fly, he becomes the fly. That's an exception. That is literally survival of the fittest being brought into the interspecies. Because maybe Jeff Goldblum was a better fly. Maybe it was a better fly than your average fly. Marby Dog says, Jeff, you have convinced me about geographic relocation for white society. Wyoming starts at 41 north, maybe 41 degree, and further north is the perfect band for preserving white society. Absolutely. I agree. I appreciate that you have been hearing my arguments about this. It's this, you know. I was listening to something. There was a politician or a commentator today that was complaining about Canada and mocking Canada, and from the U.S. And it's like you can mock the Canadian politics. Canadian politics are leftist and very weak. But I think there will be a price to pay for people who ignore demographics, so much so that I think Canada may one day be in a better position than the US. Because Canada will always have northern bands. There will always be a place to flee that's colder for white people in Canada. you don't have this in the US. And so you're going to be stacking at the northern border, and the Indians of Canada will be stacking at the southern border of Canada. Eventually, maybe there'll be a transfer. Maybe there'll be like a shake of hands and, okay, you guys become American, we become Canadian. I think that even if Canada is in deep shit from a leftist perspective, I think it has a positionary advantage. Like, literally, I as a Canadian, I live in an entirely white ethno state. It's literally just an issue of choosing the place. But you can absolutely choose the place you live in Canada without having much money. I'm not living in a $1 million neighborhood, you know, because I'm rich. There is a possibility in Canada to find northern positions that are northern enough that you will absolutely live among people of European descent. You don't even need to have a return to the land, RTTL or whatever. So that will be available to Canadians probably forever. Probably forever. And entropy is a bitch. Entropy is a bitch, and the further away you are from leftists, the tougher it is for them to annoy you. And I think I may have just found the sweet spot. Because I don't see people coming to annoy me or vandalize me or harass my family anymore. I think I may just have found the sweet spot of cold and wind and sniper sights all around my house in a plane and the endless fields observable up to the horizon. There are a number of natural challenges that you can put between you and society, and they stop annoying you at some point. I love that someone was bringing back the old JF memes. I love these memes. Those were my good days of the internet. Me laughing about Kraut. Kraut! Trouts don't get pregnant, Kraut. And another one that I really loved was this one. This one was one of my favorite. I was searching for it and couldn't find it. So I'm super happy that Sector Toilet brought back these old JPEGs. I love this one with bright eyes, because that's me basically just talking about science and the truth while everyone is lying to themselves and generating these cuck videos, making excuses for the big lie. And I'm like, I'm coming with my artifice and my fireworks. I really love those memes. James O'Keefe was violently assaulted on Skid Row. So Skid Row, if I understand correctly, I'm not super knowledgeable in these things, but Skid Row is this... it's the Californian shithole model of the world. Like, it's the street where prostitutes and drug takers are in California. What are you doing on Skid Row, James O'Keefe? Let's have a look. I think right there he is, James O'Keefe, I think.
I got you. I'm not from out. Leave him alone.
Get away from me.
I'm not from out.
Get out of the way. Whoa, he punched him.
Let's go. Go, James. Straight, James. Go. Make a left.
Look, here's a petition right here. James, here's a petition right here. Hey, I was wondering. We getting money over here. What can I get for us? Look right here. Put this on camera. Right here.
Okay, so they wanted to annoy them about a petition.
What about the free phone?
Okay, he's saying, you are the guy who broke the law in the video because he's investigating these networks of fraudulent voters and, you know, these Democrat networks that are just very pushy on voting and they get, they pressure people, they get to their apartments, they have them vote by mail, they say, make sure you vote against Trump. So basically, all this electoral fraud that James O'Keefe has been one of the leading voices to expose this stuff. And he says he's recognizing him from a past video, apparently.
Can I look at the petition? Can I look at the petition?
I'm not breaking any law.
Can I look at the petition?
Ah, so this guy was caught exchanging cigarettes for signature. Wow. So that's how you get a population of homeless drug addicts to vote left so clearly. Because they wouldn't even care about going to the voting booth. But they get them to sign stuff and free cigarettes. They're addicted. So they want them, or it's valuable enough and they want to resell them.
We ain't breaking the law, bro.
It's against the law in California to get cigarettes and cash.
I ain't giving cash, I ain't giving nothing away. I just give cell phones. I do free cell phones.
We have you guys on camera shouting money for petitions.
I don't do money.
Money for petitions, he says, I don't do money.
We have you shouting money and cigarettes.
I don't do money for petitions.
Can we look at the petition? What's that? You're going to send me down.
And now you have this guy trying to intimidate the cameraman.
We're just asking questions. I got my spray ready to go.
Poor James O'Keefe. What a job. It's like I wouldn't want my job to force me to go film live on Skid Row. I prefer declaring Skid Row, and in fact the whole of California, as lost territory. But see, the idealist like James O'Keefe, the problem with this level of idealism is you're going to end up dying at some point. It's not a threat. Of course, I love James O'Keefe. I would hope that he doesn't die. But you're dealing here with basically gangsters who have taken over an entire state. And there's the unclean gangsters of Skid Row, but there's the clean gangsters of the political world. And you are messing with people here that are unsalvageable in many ways. I would rather just declare California bankrupt and say, okay, this entire place belongs to Mexico. Yes, Marby Dog. Give it to Mexico.
Fine. That guy almost found out, though. We don't have to ask you in a public space.
Oh, the public space. Wow, we got a big fan here of old school JF. We do not have to ask. We are in a public space. He's right. He has the right to stand on a public space and film.
Whoa, we can get it. It's going slow.
Let's go, let's go.
So what is this? They're now running. I don't know exactly what they are after. Is the guy running away?
Hey.
And now violence arises against the cameraman. Okay, so now pepper sprayed.
Get out of here! Keep it, keep running. Let's go, let's go, let's go. Go, James.
You have... Oh man, I love James O'Keefe running with his suit in California. I mean, you gotta respect the guy and his art. The guy never gives up. What a character. He's gonna be risking his physical safety in California. What a man. And he runs like you would imagine a geeky journalist running with a suit.
Straight, James, straight, straight. Go, go, go. Make a left, make a left.
Get everybody.
Look at this guy running for his safety. What a man. I love this guy. Investing his own risks, his own life, to confront fraud in the face. Like, traditional journalist, you know, journalist harassment of the 60s, almost.
They rolled up. Attack. Pepper spray. Make a right. Make a right, make a right.
Where are we going?
Straight.
Where are we going?
I got you.
Yes, it does feel like GTA. You know how the running of the GTA feels awkward? Maybe it wasn't awkward. Maybe that's how humans run.
Keep going. I know where we're going. Just gonna attack. Keep going. Keep going. I know where we're going. Okay, slow down. Slow down. You're good. With that stoplight, I'm gonna make it right. I got you.
Yeah, he defended himself legally, defended himself. James O'Keefe is missing. We're trying to find him. We're trying to locate James O'Keefe right now. A group of them attacked us. They have a car. I saw a DMV thing on their car. We found some of our crew. We're here live in Skid Row. Look, this is our camera guy. He got punched in the neck by one of the illegal petitioners. He punched our guy in the neck.
Mike's losing his voice.
Oh, I got pepper spray in my mouth. We were attacked. We're trying to find James O'Keefe. We're trying to locate James O'Keefe right now. We got attacked on Skid Row by illegal petitioners.
You're going to go down here and you're going to make a right. I'm keeping you away from Weingarten.
Yeah, that was quite the voice. Pepper voice. I mean, this is the real state of California. This is the state of these roads filled with tents, homeless encampments. You park your car there. I don't think I would rate the safety for my car very high if I was to leave it right there.
I'm keeping you away from that place. You need to make it right up here. Okay. I got paper sprayed. He attacked me.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
We did our show literally right here, and then we decided to go mobile and try to find some of the petitioners. We found them. And they weren't happy to the point that they got aggressive and tried to attack us.
Okay, so that's the situation. We got these illegal petitioners, and they are always involved in these these gathering of signatures and gathering of subscription to the next vote. And this particular one was giving illegal rewards, a cigarette for a vote. Sadie Edwards says, imagine walking home to your million-dollar home in downtown California and you hear someone says, we're here on Skid Row. Yes. Absolutely ridiculous. I cannot believe that these places have high-priced homes still. There has to be a point at which this troubled leftist area of crime, corruption, and violations of the law and carelessness of the DAs, there has to be a point at which this affects your home value. I don't get it. All right, I needed to clear my nose. The Bongino show, Dan Bongino is crashing because he was one of the leading podcasters somehow, and I never understood that. Never understood what is intelligent about this guy. He's been delivering to me a very boomer discourse on a MAGA angle of tough speech, but not very intelligent engagement, and always very non-committal on all the subjects that matter to the actual world. In the same way, politics is very non-committal. So now he's back from serving in the government. Now his podcast is much less popular, and really all he's doing is kind of make himself the voice of power. And I think people can smell that. You know, he was able probably in his old career to kind of suggest that maybe he was against the system, that maybe he was not one more politician guy who would betray his base. But he's not able to suggest this anymore. And now he has to basically make himself a bearer of the official narrative and to fight here against Joe Kent, because Joe Kent betrayed the Trump administration by leaving and by saying this Iran war makes no sense. And by the way, they were not very serious about investigating the murder of Charlie Kirk.
Between 30 different disparate facts, and this is your hero?
It's a data point. It's a data point that we need to look
at. It's a data point. You mean a data point? Like the devices and the thousands of interviews that were conducted? That's a data point too, except it's actual data. You just don't like the answer because you don't think the Jews are behind it. Yeah, let me just point out, by the way, just a couple of the
So the point of Joe Kent, I don't think that Dan Bongino has a real opposition to it. The point of Joe Kent was there was data that we had that would have been worth an investigation on potential foreign nexus connections to the murder of Charlie Kirk, and he's not satisfied that the investigation was pursued. So that is very important. It's Dan Bongino's reply to this is, well, you don't like the results. Well, tell us about the investigation here. Before we talk of a result, Dan, tell us, what was your result? Did you investigate these foreign nexus? Did you go speak to the people who on Twitter announced that something big was about to happen tomorrow to Charlie Kirk? Because it's very easy to say, well, you don't like the results without talking to us about the method and whether there are results at all. The people has not been informed properly about this.
Predictions, where is this Joe debating Joe in his own interview? Again, there was an Iranian fatwa against nuclear development. What, just minutes later? The Iranians are not stopping their development of nuclear program.
Oh. You are committing an error, Dan Bongino, and you know it. That's why you stopped your sentence. So Dan Bongino is trying to frame the idea that Joe Kent was self-contradictory in the interview. Because Joe Kent said there was a fatwa that was a religious order in Iran not to develop nuclear weapons. Now, there is a later statement of Joe Kent in the interview where he says they were developing nuclear power. Now, nuclear weapons and nuclear power are two different things. But see, we're exactly right here in the lie that Trump, that the pro-Israeli people, that Bongino now is pushing, they're all pushing this lie that, oh, well, they were developing nuclear. Now they have this goalpost move that they've done over the last few months. And Nick Fuentes described this. They switched from nuclear weapons to nuclear powered. So now Trump on his Truth Social post that I have right here, he's complaining against the Europeans didn't help us fight Iran becoming a nuclear powered nation. Well, wait a minute. Nuclear powered was not your discourse even 6 months ago, Trump. You were talking about nuclear weapons. Now suddenly it has all changed to nuclear powered. Now you are fighting a nuclear powered Iran. Well, France is nuclear powered too. Lots of countries are producing their energy with nuclear power. So they try to surf on the distinction, on the non-distinction that they want to insert into people's mind, that there are no differences between various forms of nuclear energy. The ones in the bomb, the ones in the civilian programs. And look at the drift that Bongino is trying to pull this right here. And you know you're dishonest when you have to cut mid-sentence to not explain to the public that there's no contradiction.
Oh, debating Joe in his own interview. Again, there was an Iranian fatwa against nuclear development. What, just minutes later? The Iranians are not stopping their development of nuclear
Nuclear program? Nuclear fatwa against nuclear weapon. Two different things, Dan. Two different things. Are you getting so old that you don't see the difference anymore? Or are you engaged in deception right now? I believe you are consciously engaged in deception. You are making up false contradictions that do not exist in Joe Kent's interview. Because you are on the wrong side of this. You are on the wrong side of history, Dan.
Are you debating yourself? Because you're doing a terrible job. Who won? Joe.
So see this rhetoric, this Socratism? Huh, are you debating yourself? You just proved yourself wrong. Self-contradiction. Boom. Owned. No, you couldn't even, your sentence is so wrong that you couldn't even complete it. Because if you had completed it, you would have had to say nuclear program. And any of your audience would have been able to see explicitly that there's a difference between a fatwa against nuclear weapons and nuclear program. You stop saying the word, Dan. Why? Because you know that if you had said the word program, people would have been able to make the difference between a program of energy and a program of nuclear weapons. You are a fucking liar, Dan Bongino, a fucking mop of the system, a fucking slave, a puppet, Dan. You're so disappointing. Because out of all your Rumble doings and your free podcasting and your suggestions and your little indirect non-committal commentary that made people believe maybe you had it in you to fight the system, now you're out there lying. lying to everyone that's watching you. That's why you're not number one anymore. That's why you're down the drain. 15th position or something. David last name says, Bongino, Kent are two sides of the same slop coin. In a way, you are right. In a way, you are absolutely right. Don't take my criticism of Dan Bongino tonight as the idea that I'm not also objected to what's happening with this whole Kent Tucker Carlson circle. But certainly what I can say is that this is slimier than Joe Kent. This is slimier than Joe Kent and Tucker Carlson. I could side with Joe Kent and Tucker Carlson, and I do believe they do a lot of goods right now. We can talk later about what exactly is behind all this and what's the psyop here. We can talk later about it. But Dan Bongino, that is slimy. And that is lying. ELDR sends a super chat. He says, to integrity. To integrity, gentlemen. To integrity.
One or Joe two. Iran's not an imminent threat. Then he implies later on that the Iranians are behind the threat, action that shot President Trump in the head. Really? You know something there?
Well, that is also not exactly what Joe Kent said. Joe Kent said, I've gotten from the interview that he doesn't particularly believe that it's directly Iranians who led to the shooting of Trump. But he pointed out and mentioned the fact that there exists evidence and people claiming, pointing in the direction of Iran. That was not so much Joe Kent saying, it's Iran. That was Joe Kent saying, confused data arrived and it deserves investigation. That is the proper representation of what Joe Kent said. He didn't say or imply it's Iran. He said there are people who believe it's Iran. There are people thinking it's in that direction. Jackie Chan sends a super chat. Let's have a look.
Is there anything in biology that could predispose some fathers to mainly have daughters only or sons only? Been reading about how King Henry VIII had much more daughters than sons. Hope you're doing well.
These mechanisms are possible locally, but they are impossible globally. So basically, the whole of the population has to be directed toward 50-50. If you want to read about this seriously, the most serious statement made about this was Robert Travers and his co-author in the book The Selfish Genetic Elements. And he goes through the whole thing. So it is a perfect review of data on this. And a perfect review of the theory involved. Can you have kamikaze sperm? Can you have... the question of aggressive pursuit of one's own sex. Can that develop? And the answer is no over long periods. But the answer is also there may be little local bubbles that allow this. Kind of temporary greedy genes. And because you can have temporary greedy genes, you can have temporary self-rewarding sexual genes. So what form can it take? Well, you could think that in certain environments, being a male is less fit. Maybe in an environment where there is plenty of females. So maybe you could think in principle, if my local environment happens to be overrepresented in females, then I have an interest in favoring males because they will benefit from an ecological niche where it so happens that there are plenty of females available. Now, that could happen. But down the line, there has to be a balance because down the line, if everyone plays the male card, then you have an equilibrium. So at equilibrium, you lost the sound. Have we lost the sound? Hello. I am seeing the sound. Not just me then. Okay, stream back to normal for me. Okay, the sound should be back. I don't know what happened. So at Equilibrium, no, you cannot have selection of females versus males, because down the line, if the whole population drives toward one direction, the rest drives toward the other. So there's an equilibrium to it. People are reporting the stream is fine. All right.
I thought they weren't an imminent threat, but they were an imminent threat that tried to kill President Trump?
No, he did not say that. And anyways, you know, Dan, we can see here the dishonesty, because if they tried to kill Trump 3 years ago or 2 years ago, that wouldn't be an imminent threat. Imminent threat in geopolitics speech is they are about to do something and we see moves. We see moves that are indicating they are doing something. Not they've done something in the past. That's precisely the definition of imminent. Imminent threat is there is something upcoming. Martel says, JF, do you think the USA might be bombing Iran so they don't have to fight Iran and China at the same time? No, I mean, maybe it's part of the reasons being invoked around the circles of Trump, but I don't think it's a particularly logical way to see it. They are doing this to weaken China, for sure. That's part of the motivation. But they are doing this first and foremost because Israel wants it to be done. That's the first reason. Now, why they want it to be done? Yes, it's because there is basically a clash of empires, and Israel wants to, in the future, be an empire that's equivalent to China. So who controls the Middle East regions between the two countries down the line is what matters to the question of the Chinese to Israel game of power. And Israel could be this very small country with no influence in 100 years from now. And China could be a super giga empire, and in hand with Russia, controlling the whole around Israel. But Israel has a different view. Israel wants them to be at the center of a controlling empire, and they want to benefit and profit from the existence of their neighbors. Sadi Edward says, Belt and Road goes through Iran. Exactly. So that's Belt and Road is an example of this idea of a Chinese interest being laid out all across the Middle East, and therefore leading to China growing from the activities and profiting from the activities happening in the Middle East, even up to Africa. They tried, at least. Africa is harder, though. Gasparovsky sends $10. Thank you so much. He says, here is my wild theory. Let's take the example of the first snake that grew little legs. If God had placed something in the female's brain to make them think. And your super chat cuts there, but I think I can see where you were headed. Okay, he completed with a regular message. If the female... My chat is messing up. If the female thought in their brains, I really want to hook up with this guy, that would have greatly helped evolution. That's all I'm saying. Well, understand this. The snakes had legs. The snakes come from reptiles that were lizards. They were lizard-like, at least. So the snakes originally had legs. So it's actually... so much more bizarre than even you make it in your description. What happened is that the females found the snakes without legs sexy. And they get the lizards got fucked over by their females, okay? So there were lizards. They were having their wives. Everything was going well. It was lizard world. Stable marriages, monogamy. You get a lizard girlfriend. She's a cutie from high school, a high school sweetheart. You make 200 lizard babies with her, and then you die. That was the good old days. At some point, the woman started, the woman lizards started conspiring. They started choosing the lizards with smaller and smaller legs, the males. And it was an item of fashion. A little bit like, you know, they're choosing smaller and smaller males in humanity right now. We are becoming snakes, really. Because the lizard females, they were finding these little hands. Oh, look, my husband has such little hands. And on the other hand, you had lizards that had big hands, like Trump. Very dominant lizards with big hands. And they weren't even charming anymore to the lizard females. And so the females were like, oh, they're so cute with their tiny, tiny hands. Oh. But they ended up selecting out the hands of the husbands. And that is how you get to snakes, my friend. It's all about female selection. The females started having this crazy directional love for the lizards with small hands and small arms. And they will never have legs or arms anymore. So never let your female population control so much that they can literally remove your legs and arms. Jordan B. Videos says, so glad your show is back on YouTube. Keep up the great work, JF. Well, thank you very much for the super chat. That is all I had to say for today. You know, the news about the war are so weak. I think we've won. You think you've won. What am I supposed to report about this? Well, the feelings of Trump. We are in a time of feelings. And now the president feels like we've won. Okay. Remarek says, it was make lizards raping the lizards with no feet because they couldn't get away. Another alternative hypothesis. Maybe it wasn't the females. Maybe it was the male lizards who conspired to deprive the females of their feet to better commit lizard rape. Well, my friends, I don't see how I could build a better conclusion before saying you goodbye for the night than lizard rape. Handless, armless, lizard rape.